Jackie Kaiser is an agent with Westwood Creative Artists, whose clients include our own Mary DeMichele, as well as such award-winning and renowned writers as Jan Martel, Frances Attani, Barbara Gowdy, Mark Abley, Charlotte Gray, Karen Connolly, Thomas King, Bonnie Bernard, and Rosemary Sullivan. And for the better part of 10 years prior to becoming an agent, she was an editor at Penguin Books in Toronto. So she has a rich and varied experience in publishing, and she's going to speak to you for about an hour and take questions. So please join me in giving a warm welcome to Jackie Kaiser.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Stephanie, and great to be here. And I think it's been a wonderful day thus far. I hope that I will be able to share something, you know, useful or insightful with you. I'm going to try and leave lots of time for questions at the end, so that you have a chance to direct me in an appropriate way. I thought what I would do is talk just a little bit about the role of an agent, first of all, and then talk about what I have learned, having been an editor and having been an agent, about what kinds of factors can increase the chance of writers getting published. Okay, hopefully give you some practical tips on that. But in terms of the role of an agent, first of all, I want to say it is certainly my view that it is in no way necessary, and in some cases not even all that desirable for a first-time writer or even an established writer to have an agent. I think it's a very individual decision. There are many writers in this country who have published many successful books here and even in other territories around the world without the aid of an agent. So there's no rule about that. I mean, agents take your money. We get paid by sharing in what writers earn. So the typical fee is 15% of your earnings. So if you are a first-time writer and you're going to get an advance of, you know, $5,000 or $10,000, it's actually, you know, for the book you've spent 3 years working on, it's kind of painful, I think, to contemplate actually giving up the 15%. There's this idea that the agent is going to, you know, be able to get you a six-figure advance for your novel, or, you know, sell your book when you yourself would not be successful selling your book to a publisher. But if you think about it just logically, you know, of all the writers published by one publishing house, some of them have agents and some of them don't. So it is, you know, just logically more difficult to get an agent than it is to get a publisher. And so I don't really think that there is any particular reason why you need somebody to help you. Some people are really uncomfortable negotiating and dealing with money things, and really want to leave that to someone else. But frankly, there is, with a first book, seldom a huge amount of room for negotiation. And if you are lucky enough to find yourself in the position of having an offer from a publisher that you've received without the help of an agent, I can tell you that the best way to find an agent is to have an offer. Because you can call someone up and say, I've got an offer from, you know, Penguin Books, as it typically happens, meaning when unagented writers find themselves in the position of getting an offer, they often do then at that point phone an agent, and you know, the agent then negotiates with the publisher and increases the offer by 15% to cover their and then, you know, you have someone to walk you through the process. I mean, I think obviously agents can be really valuable. They're great at providing context for a writer about what goes on in the publishing business. Hopefully helpful in terms of being a first reader. Because I was an editor before becoming an agent, that's a big part of what I care about. I think different agents, I mean, it's a very personal kind of business, and some agents have strengths in one area and more than in another. In my case, and I think in many cases, agents really love to be part of the process of building a writer's career, and that includes, you know, giving encouragement, helping them make judgments, a writer make judgments about what might be the next book idea. You know, you can sit down with somebody or have a phone or email conversation with somebody about three different ideas for a novel, or, you know, should I do another novel, or should I do a nonfiction project, or whatever. And so there's that kind of person who is your advocate with whom to have those discussions. But, you know, it certainly is in no way necessary. What agents actually do is we negotiate the sale of rights to your book with publishers. And, you know, the first step in that is the hardest step, which is to actually find a publisher to make an offer for us to negotiate. It's a really, really tough market, as I'm sure everyone here has been told countless times. But new writers are always being published, and that will never change. So there's certainly lots of reason to be hopeful. And for those of you who've never been published before, in a funny way, you can take some solace in knowing that it's actually, in a weird way, easier to be a first-time novelist in this country than it is to be a third-time or fourth-time novelist. You know, before you're published, and when you have your first contract in your hand, be it for $2,000 or for $20,000 or whatever, the world is your oyster. There, you have nothing other than a sense of hope and possibility ahead of you. You could be shortlisted for the Giller Prize. You know, anything can happen. But what happens, unfortunately, is that reality is, generally not so kind to writers. And it's a really tough process, I think, to stick at it. You know, I think that a first book, followed by a second book, followed by a third book, writers often find that it gets more difficult. You know, if your first book doesn't actually sell that well, it may be forgiven, because first books, you're starting from nothing. But on to your second book and your third book, it can get difficult. And I'm certainly noticing in this country, as well as mostly in the US and the UK, that a terrible thing is happening, which is that very, very good writers, to whom publishers have mostly had a lot of loyalty, are now being dropped when their new novel comes in and they look at the sales record. And that is a climate change because of BookScan, which is a book sales tracking software package, basically, that is available to publishers in, it's going to soon be available in Canada, and it is available in the other territories. So, you know, whereas this is a business built on optimism, and publishers are wonderful for their optimism. You know, they look at the track record of the six books they've published by a writer to whom they've been very loyal. The new book arrives on their desk in manuscript form. The editor reads it, loves it, goes into the editorial meeting and talks about it in front of the group, and manages to get everybody very excited about it. And then it comes time to for the sales director and the marketing director to weigh in with sales estimates and a marketing plan. And you know what? They'll look at it not entirely dismissive of the backlist sales of the previous books, but they will look at it on its own merits. But it's going to be a lot more difficult to do that soon when basically everyone who wants access to the information of true sales numbers is going to be able to get it. So anyway, I don't want to dwell too much on the negative aspects of the market now. Obviously, an agent's job is partly to help navigate the writer through those pitfalls, over their career, and to sometimes suggest a shift from one publishing house to another publishing house if there's not a good editorial rapport, or if there's a feeling that a really talented writer hasn't been well published. And, you know, I think that probably everybody here can imagine that the goal is not to have a beautiful hardcover book on your shelf and, you know, $10,000 in the bank account. The goal is to have readers and to build readership from one book to the next, and to help the reader, the writer grow and develop an audience. And there's a lot of intangibles, or at least difficult to predict factors that affect whether or not those kinds of things happen. Just getting a publishing contract in your hand is only a small part of it. It's not going to guarantee, you know, that the process of having your book published is going to be all that positive. So in that sense, you know, if you have an agent, you've got someone to help you evaluate your experience. If it's your first book, or even if it's not your first book, sometimes it's difficult to know whether you're having a good experience or not. You know, when you're angry at your editor, when you feel like your publicist is really not working very hard on your behalf, and when you hate your cover design, it's hard to know whether you know what you should do about that. What an agent can do is help you compare that experience to the experience of other writers, you know, which you would do informally without the help of an agent by talking to other writers yourself. But anyway, I think that what I should spend most of my time on really is talking to you a little bit about what I see as the way to kind of ameliorate the bad news that it's a really tough marketplace for new writers, and especially for literary writers, with the good news, which is that, you know, I think this business is filled with editors and publishers, and, you know, for that matter, publicists and marketing people and booksellers and reviewers who are passionate about literary writing, whether it's literary fiction or nonfiction. And I can't really talk about I can talk about narrative nonfiction. I can't really talk about poetry. I don't deal with poetry publishers at all. But anyway, I think that there's a lot of passion for it. There's a lot of people working very, very hard to enable good writers to be well published. So here are some of the things that I think would help you get to the point where you go from being an unpublished writer to a published writer. And there are three things. The first is that I think and this is clearly the most important, is that you think big and set the bar really, really high. The corollary for that is please do not submit your manuscript either to an agent or a publisher before it's absolutely ready. And practically speaking, what that means is, you know, a number of things. I think that especially for younger writers or first-time writers, it's difficult not to want to have affirmation early on in the process. You know, am I going in the right direction? Is this valuable? But I think that truly the best advice that I can give is that you look inside for your affirmation and not rely too much on external voices, because when we were talking at lunch about, you know, the diverse responses to a book like Life of Pi, for example, or, you know, any book you can think of that has gotten perhaps a lot of acclaim, you know, you could find many people who would say that they really hated the book. And you know, one of the things that haunts me as an agent and haunted me when I was an editor is that the same manuscript submitted to three different publishers, and perhaps, you know, if you can imagine being published by three different publishers, would be very different at the end of the editorial and publication process. And it's a very collaborative kind of undertaking. So I think that while it's important to get outside readers, and, you know, you're all in a creative writing program where you're sharing your work and critiquing your work and learning from that process, I think that your book, your writing, isn't ever going to matter as much to anyone else as it matters to you. And you've got to become your own best editors and your own best critics. I don't mean harshest critics, but I mean, I think that you really have to work harder than you've ever imagined. You can push yourself harder. You know, make sure you're reading book reviews, make sure you're reading other really, really good writers, and, you know, thinking consciously about how you can improve. And you know, on an extremely practical level, one of the things that I think is really important, and I'm amazed at how often I hear that writers haven't done it, is to read your manuscript out loud. You know, if you're working on a long piece of writing, or I suppose for short fiction as well, or an essay, it's amazing what you will find, what you will hear differently, the mistakes you'll pick up if you read it out loud. I mean, I'm not a writer. I can't imagine how difficult it would be, having lived with the same material for a long period of time, to go back and then, you know, thinking you're finished, go back and then read it out loud again. You know, you have to find a way to refresh yourself and find the energy for it, and do it not in kind of a rote way, but you know, with feeling, as they say. And I think that that's just kind of emblematic of what I see in my role as an agent, and what I saw in my role as an editor. I think that there is a lot of really good writing in this country, and a lot of talent in writers, but I don't often see people working as hard as I think they could be. And you know, you are going to just simply increase your chances of getting published if you learn how to work really hard, you know, try and create really good work habits for yourself. And you know, good enough is not really good enough. You only have one chance to write a first book and have a first book published. And if you have an editor who buys it and publishes it, but you could have done better, you know, you can't rely on that person to actually know what your best work can be. You've got to really know what your own capabilities are. Anyway, the benefits are increasing the chance of publication if you, you know, avoid the temptation to send something out too early. You increase your own creative control over your work, which I think is important. One of the downsides, you know, we all hear stories of novels being sold based on an outline or on a partial manuscript or a draft that needed a lot of editing. I mean, it happens all the time, but I think there are risks associated with that related to creative control. And again, it's that story of one novel, which, you know, any novel that we could choose, if we had all read it, we would have a room full of diverse responses to it. And we would all say, I wish, you know, he or she had done this, or I really didn't like, you know, that character or whatever. And so I think that, you know, while an editor tries to be very conscious of intervention only in the sense that we're trying to make the writer's book more the writer's book, if that makes sense. We're trying only to help the writer through editing be more true to that writer's original vision. We are intervening in some way. And so I think the further along you are when you have that intervention, the better. I find a lot of my you know, newer writer clients, younger, not always in years, but in terms of publishing history, it scares me how easily their heads are turned by what their editors say. And I think you know, as you all grow and evolve as writers, what I expect will happen is that you will probably feel less secure in your skill as a writer, because you'll set the bar higher and higher for yourself, but you will also probably, and I hope, be more skeptical about what editors are telling you. You know, what editors want is for to be able to freely offer their views on a manuscript, but then to know that that writer is going to dismiss, you know, the vast, you know, majority of it as appropriate, and just take to heart the things that really resonate. And so anyway, I'm big on creative control. I don't think it makes a lot of sense with creative writing, literary writing, to be too easily swayed by what other people might tell you about their response to your work. You know, so thinking big, setting the bar high is also important, because what you show an editor or an agent is going to create a first impression. And if the first impression is a really strong first impression, you're liable to get more money. You're liable to get the offer. You're liable to get more money. And you're also liable to get more attention when your book is published, because, of course, when a book is bought within a publishing house, it's at least discussed internally and often read by more than one person. And so if somebody in the marketing department is reading this first novel and it is in need of quite a bit of editing by the editor, well, you know, they might have faith that the editor can turn it around and do that, but you can't rely upon people to be able to imagine what you're capable of doing with editing. You want to do as much of that hard work before showing it around. And, you know, an example of that that I do want to mention, because it is, you know, quite extraordinary in my own experience, in my career, is the novel Deafening by Frances Attani. Now, it was a first novel, but of course she had been writing for, if you know anything of her work, she's been writing for, you know, decades, short fiction. And so it's not fair, in a sense, to compare it to your typical first novel, because she was quite a mature writer at that point. But she didn't have anybody read it before she showed it to me. Not a soul had read it. But she's one of the most hardworking and meticulous and, you know, highly talented writers who I've worked with. And she, when she sent it to me, it was virtually publishable as it was right then. And that is such a rare experience for an agent or for an editor, that the result of that is tremendous excitement on my part when I read it, because I felt, you know, that I knew immediately that it was pretty special. And tremendous excitement on the part of, more importantly, her publishers, who bought it. Publishers love to get a novel that they don't have to do a lot of work on. you know, they're all pressed for time. They are also always making this huge leap of faith when they sign a writer to do a book, because we do not know what the, you know, if you particularly sign a novel based on, or a nonfiction book, based on a proposal or an outline, you don't really know what you're going to be publishing at the end. The closer the book is to the final published version, when the publisher buys it, the more money they're going to pay for it, because they know they have some certainty and less risk that it's going to go off the rails. So that's my main message to you today, is work really, 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 really hard, harder than you think you have to. I mean, there's the classic story of someone, a writer, finishing a novel, putting it in the mail, you know, sending it off to a publisher, and then, you know, going to sleep and having a eureka moment and wishing they could, you know, recall it. It happens all the time, and so maybe mail it to yourself, you know, email it to yourself. Try to resist the temptation to think you're finished before you really, really, really are finished. And, you know, it's probably the easiest and most practical thing to try and get other readers outside of publishers and agents. If you feel you've taken the novel or the nonfiction book as far as you can on your own, and you really need some kind of external stimulation before going further. But I also think that, again, that's a little bit risky, and my real, the ideal scenario, I think, is to rely on your own judgment and just try and, you know, find the way to go back into your material, perhaps after a break, and just see how you might improve it. I think probably all of us walk around with, you know, nagging thoughts of things we could do better in our lives. You probably have that about your writing. Don't ignore those instincts. Go back and work, you know, work at it again. Anyway, that's number one. Number two is think like a publisher. I think this is relevant to some people and probably not relevant to others. It may come naturally to some people, and it may be really, the antithesis of what some of you may want to do with your lives. But, you know, when you're sending a submission to an agent or to a publisher, I think it is valuable to at least realize that it would be helpful to you if you thought like a publisher. So think of it like, perhaps you would tackle it like a job search. You can read reviews, you can read Quill and Quire, you can read Publishers Weekly, you can know who the people are who you're sending your material to. The easiest thing is, you know, or the most basic thing is, don't send it out to an agency or to a publishing company without somebody's name on it. You know, don't say dear editor or dear agent. Find out who you're writing to. One thing that I think a lot of writers do is look at books on their shelf that they may have read. Look in the, you know, there may be a writer whose work you admire and with whom you might compare your own work, and you can look in the acknowledgments and see who the name of the editor is, and write to that editor, and you can actually say, you know, I just read Tamarind Mem by Anita Rabadami, and I loved that book, and I thought you might be interested in my novel, which is, you know, whatever. That's helpful because it separates it from all the massive piles of manuscripts and query letters that come in with no name on them. So, you know, put a name on it, do your research. There are directories, you look at the industry magazines, you can find the names, give yourself at least a leg up that way, land on somebody's desk. You know, Josh was talking about using your contacts. I think that that's really important, and, you know, who knows what those might be. It may be simply that there is a writer in residence at a library in the city where you're living, and you can go and talk to that contact, that person, because the public is allowed to do that, and you ask them who their editor is. And you know, I mean, contact can be, you know, your father, or it can be somebody else. So you can seek them out. You can do, you know, you can manufacture contacts, I think, with a little cunning. I also think it's important to, you know, prepare a professional package when you're making a submission. You know, make sure you're providing complete information. If you have been published before, you need to say that. If you have, you know, won an award, you have to say that. If you are writing fiction, you need to tell whoever's going to be reading this novel what's relevant in that case. I mean, if you've done a tremendous amount of historical research or research, scientific research, or something that informs the novel, that's because it reflects an obsession that you have or a passion that you have, then talk about that. You know, if it's based on an historical event, and, you know, at some point, what you want to do is, in a sense, when a publisher reads a note like that comes with a manuscript, they're thinking, oh, there's maybe I can actually, you know, get a profile of this writer in The Walrus, or maybe I can get a profile in the arts section of the Globe and Mail. Fiction is really, really hard to publish, and so these kinds of things are relevant. Or you could just simply talk about the inspiration for the novel. What are you trying to achieve? You know, if you write, you try and do that, and it sounds really shitty, don't include it. But try, you know, just try, you know. Certainly a plot summary is a useful idea. I always think that it's good to make the plot summary sound as much like flap copy as you can, or something like that, catalog copy, because really the point of that isn't that the writer isn't going to, or the editor isn't going to read your novel. You know, if they're interested in reading your novel, they're going to read your novel. They might, you know, agree to read 10 pages and stop. Really good editors will do that. They will know within 10 pages, in most cases, whether or not they like something, and that's all the time they'll give you. But I think if they do go to the trouble of reading it, or if you have a junior editor who's, you know, going to read the whole thing and bring it into a meeting, what you're giving them in that plot summary is a cheat sheet, basically. It's not to, it's not that they're going to, you know, read the summary and not read the novel, not finish it and or something like that. It's just to give them a way of framing it. I think it's, you know, it's worth taking a stab at. If you can't write a plot summary, then you don't do it. But, you know, there are some people who are really bad at that and wonderful novelists. So you just have to see what your strengths are. So I guess when I think about unagented writers trying to find publishers, I guess I'm thinking, you know, look at it like a job search or something like that. Just try and imagine that you're sitting behind an editor's desk, and if they publish only nonfiction, you're not going to send them a novel. You need to know, you just try and find out a little bit about what you're doing, and that information is readily available. So the third thing, to close this section, and then we'll have some time for questions, is that I think it's really valuable to remember that success can be defined in many, many different ways. It's not just about, what isn't it just about? I was going to say, it's not just about selling books. I mean, ultimately, we hope that it is. But, I think it was Nino saying in the morning session about Carol Shields selling very, you know, very modestly for many books before The Stone Diaries. There are any number of writers who've never been published outside of Canada who are brilliant writers. There are many writers who were turned down by 26 publishers before, you know, they found someone to say yes. Most of the fiction that I sell has a single bidder. That means that there's, you know, I send it out usually on a multiple submission, and there's one person who loves it enough to, you know, go over the hump and actually make an offer on it. Sometimes you get competing bids. And in this country, you know, to be fair, I'm looking at Martha and feeling like I'm telling a white lie. I mean, in this country, it's not that hard to get multiple bids on something good.
I've lost manuscripts.
What's that?
I've lost manuscripts.
Yeah, she's lost manuscripts to me. I'm looking at her and she didn't get one that she bid on. You know, really, I guess my point is, and again, it's related to that question of creative control and you know, one novel having diverse responses. I have had wonderful editors, like the best editors in this country, tell me they despise some of the fiction that I've submitted to them, and others love it. You know, and it's you know, part of what the agent can do, because we know these people quite well, is anticipate, you know, we know their taste, we can anticipate how they might respond to certain things, but you can't always anticipate those things. And things that I love are, you know, vehemently disliked by some very, very good editors. And luckily, then the thing that I love about being an agent versus being an editor is that if I love something, I can usually find somebody else who will love it too. And so, you know, I think that, you know, it's that old story of having to write for your own reasons, have faith in yourself, and, you know, if it happens, when it happens, you know, that there is wild and wonderful success, that's fantastic. But, you know, there are, you know, the writer John Berger, for example, you know what his sales are in Canada? I mean, they're pathetic, brilliant writer. He, you know, and I think some of the comments here today have been, well, you know, what if we want to write for a really kind of, I think the word at one point that was bandied about was elitist. You know, if we want to, you know, it really depends on what your goals are. Somebody in this room may want very much to write thrillers, I don't know. Literary thrillers, I'm sure, but but, you know, it all depends on what you want to do. If you're writing, you know, for the sake of art, then I think you just have to, you know, follow your own instincts and your passions and do what makes sense to you to do and not worry too much about readership or audience, and certainly not an editor or what a publisher is going to say. And, you know, hone your craft and see what happens. The world will respond to your work, you know, when it's published in one way or another. You know, you hope for a response. You know, the worst thing is the kind of silence that greets some publications. But I think it is really difficult to anticipate. There are the stories, as Nino was saying again, of the, you know, I think it was Nino, the books that have tremendous anticipation surrounding their publication, and they, you know, the readers do not respond for whatever reason. You know, people just do not connect to the book, and the books, you know, though beloved, don't really, by their publishers, don't really take off in a commercial sense. And then there are the books that everybody churned down, and that, you know, were bought for, you know, a very modest amount of money by a publisher, one publisher who believed in it, and they've gone on to be very successful. And then, of course, there's the vast majority of books that are published which have modest advances, modest sales, and then they, you know, go on from there. So I think that, you know, it's a matter of, you know, figuring out what your definition of success is, taking heart in the person who writes you a letter who says, "I hugged my mother because I read your, you know, read your story," and you know, just continuing to follow what you believe makes sense as a writer. Anyway, that's kind of a I think all I want to say. But I would love to answer whatever questions you might have.
Could you talk a little bit about the merits of publishing in journals before going to literary agent?
Yeah, I think it's a really, really good idea. Certainly, it's a difficult process because it takes a long time. So you have to be patient and think of it in sort of the longer term sense. But definitely. Publishers as well as agents will take note of having you having been published in the right journals. You know, there are the people who write to us with their publication history, and you know, it's the Toronto Star, you know, or something. You know, some really small stuff, but the right journals really do make a difference.
What about excerpts from the manuscript that you're submitting?
Yeah, that's totally fine. Excerpts from work in progress is reasonable. Publishers always. But it's really hard to sell them. There are very, or unless they change their relationship with one of their clients, and don't represent them anymore, and then you know have room to take on new people, is that they're just really kind of too busy. And the difficulty is that, you know, it's something that I really struggle with myself because I, having been an editor, am really energized by taking on new people, but. You can't keep doing it without being spread too thin. And so, you know, for your sake as well, I don't think a beginning agent is, I think the important thing is to find the right fit, somebody who with a publisher or with an agent, the only thing you really want, in addition to, you know, decent terms in your contract, is someone who can be your passionate advocate. You know, you want somebody who understands what you're trying to do, who you believe really cares about it, and who will, you know, be awake at night thinking about it. And if you ever are in the lucky position of having more than one publisher to choose from, then you will know the difference probably if you talk to each of them. You know, there'll just be one publisher with whom you have a special kind of rapport. And you know whether or not they're offering the most money. If it's your first book, that's a really important factor to consider, I think, because it's about so much more than the amount of money they're willing to pay you up front.
Maybe this is obvious, but yeah. If you're going to submit fiction, you should have been published in a fictional journal rather than some poetry.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there is this kind of vast divide between the world of poetry. I mean, there are poets who write novels, but it's, yeah, unfortunately the two worlds don't speak to each other that much.
And the right journals for fiction?
Well, you know, Malahat, Descant, you know, I mean, you can probably figure that out, but you know, there's no particular specific right list, but I just mean as opposed to the Toronto Star. No disparagement meant to the Toronto Star, but yeah, one, you know, one's the journals that set the bar high.
Can you tell me a little bit more about those first 10 pages?
Yeah, I can, and you know, it was kind of a throwaway remark. I mean, in the sense that Ann Patty, who's Jan Martel's agent publisher in New York, who is a real wonderful person and a real character and has been in the business a long time, will do that. I mean, she decided within, you know, minutes of having received his manuscript that she loved it. You know, she's kind of a larger than life character. Literally, though, I think someone with that level of experience can decide within probably 50 pages, and they might stop before that, whether or not, you know, that is all the time they'll give you. I don't think that's always the case, though. I do think, actually, when you're talking about Canadian presses, that you would show your novel to if you've convinced them to read it. And that's, you know, basically your goal, whether you have an agent. It's probably the most important thing an agent can do for you is actually get your novel read, or your proposal or your manuscript read. You know, that's probably the most important thing, because I think that the difficulty you have without an agent is not necessarily figuring out who to send it to, but convincing the people who receive it to read it. And, you know, publishers in this country do read unsolicited manuscripts, but not necessarily the ones that say to whom it may concern, and not the ones that are terrible. I mean, there's just a lot of terrible things that arrive. You know, anybody can submit anything. So, you know, they have the job of getting through all the junk, and sometimes there's probably something really good mixed in with the junk that they're just shoveling, you know, back out the door. So, a query, you know, your cover letter doesn't have to be long at all, but it has to be a good cover letter. And you need to have a good opening to your novel. You know, we can't wait until the second half to become interested. It could be a brilliant novel, but we won't be there. I mean, and I think the rule of some editors who will only read 50 pages is in some ways, though harsh, a reasonable rule, because readers won't do it. I mean, I'm sure we all in this room have had the experience of reading, of picking up many books and not finishing them. So, there's no formula for, you know, how to start. But
we've been talking about novels, you have actually. But I'm curious to hear what you say about short fiction, the market value it is. Can you actually? I mean, I know authors who have actually built, large prestigious
yep.
careers in short fiction, but still it's harder to do, it seems.
It is harder, but yeah, there is actually a fair bit of short fiction being published now. It's harder because no matter who you look at, if you have a writer who writes short fiction as well as novels, their short fiction will always undersell their novels by a vast degree. And so it's difficult for publishers. And the reason, why is that? Well, that's because I think as readers, we in the very aggregate sense, crave the satisfaction of a longer work. You know, we want the narrative, the longer narrative. So obviously we know, you know, the exceptions. There's, you know, the giant of Alice Munro, and there's David Bismogus, and, you know, there's all sorts of really interesting younger writers in this country who are being published by the big houses in short fiction. So it's definitely a viable form, but I think that what helps is if what you're doing is really, I don't know, it's the same thing that helps with a novel. It's got to have some kind of distinguishing feature. I don't think there's, in terms of market value, it's very tough.
I don't know if this is a related question, but what's your feel for how Canadian literature is regarded abroad? Is it these are the boom years?
Oh, but abroad we are stars. Yeah, so it's very good times in that sense.
But the short fiction doesn't travel as well as an author.
Short fiction is, yeah, oh yeah, in translation, you know, with the exception of people who are already selling well internationally, or, you know, a rare exception like a David Bismogus or something like that, who gets, you know, into the New Yorker and there's buzz for, you know, some strange constellation of reasons that you can't create, you know, you can only, you know, enjoy. It's really, really tough. We don't sell much of our short fiction in translation at all. It just doesn't, I mean, it doesn't translate culturally as much. Well, you can imagine the number of writers we read or we buy in translation in this country is small. And so you're already skimming the cream of the crop for translation, and they would most, you know, 9 times out of 10 or 99 times out of 100 choose the longer narrative rather than the short fiction collection. But I think short fiction is a really exciting form, and I think that there are people who are really, really good at it, and you know, it's definitely something to, you know, pursue with great enthusiasm if that's what, that's the form you're excited about. And I, you know, just as I wouldn't worry about finding a publisher for your novel when you're writing it, I would just write it and see. But it is, it's generally considered a harder way to start, to debut a writer. The small presses tend to be better at it, but Penguin and, you know, notably, because they've done a lot of short fiction in the last little while, and other publishers as well are trying. They're trying hard. I think what'll happen in the next 2 years is if the books that they have, the short fiction collections that they have so enthusiastically published in the last 2 years have worked, then it'll be great, you know. But it's been a bit of an experiment for the bigger houses, I think.
Agents aren't absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. And I must, well, going through the writer's guide, that there are a lot of them saying only taking agented manuscripts. And if you have a work that you think is really, really good and all those things,
yes,
you know, believing in yourself,
right,
don't you want to try at the top instead of some little publisher first? Just
yes.
To tell them.
Yes. However, the ones that say only taking agented manuscripts, it's not true. Yeah, they do. They absolutely do. Sorry, I didn't make that very clear at the beginning. Yeah, you know, any publisher in this country every publisher in this country publishes writers who don't have agents, and so, you know, but to answer your other part of your question, yeah, I think that it's reasonable to start out when you have something that you feel is really, you know, really strong, and also something that will be of interest to the major publishers, because that is more, at least that's the ideal scenario. If you're going to a small press, you're talking about a really small advance, and while an agent may be very happy to do that for you, you know, it's 15% of a small amount of money, and it may not be economically advisable for you to do that. But yeah, I think that it's a good idea to start by talking to an agent who you think might be interested, and see what kind of a response you get. The best, you know, the worst thing that can happen is that you'll get some feedback. Or actually, the worst thing that can happen is that you just get no. I'm not taking on new clients. But you know, one of the problems is that it can take some agents a really long time to get back to you. I will say that though I do often say that I won't look at something because I just know from the description of it that it's not something that I would feel I had the expertise to support a writer on. And so I can make a pretty quick assessment based on whether I think I can help them. If I do agree to read something, I do it within a couple of months, like 2 months at the outside. But literally, I know some of my own colleagues and some other publishers or agents, as well as publishers, will take like 6-8 months, and I think that the difficulty for a writer, if you have a work that you're excited about, is waiting. And of course, agents prefer to have you approach us sequentially, not concurrently, because if I, you know, I make my money, I make my living by the commissions I charge, and if I'm going to invest the time in reading something, and then we just don't like to compete. We like the publishers to compete.
Well,
we don't like to compete.
That's not the advice I got.
You got advice to send to the agent?
I was saying, when you're starting off, like, just send out
blanket
15.
It.
Yeah.
You know what? I actually think that that is not necessarily the best approach, partly because I believe, and I, you know, I send to publishers all the time. This is what I do. I think I learn something when I get feedback from a publisher. Not necessarily, you know, you can't, as I've said before, you can't take everybody's response to heart, because they could just be the wrong person for the book, but you might learn something. You might learn something by the questions they ask about how to frame it. You might learn that it's actually too early. You might have, you know, it's, I don't know. I would say try a few at a time. Don't go out on a big, big submission.
This is for agents.
Yeah. For agents, I would... Anyway, you can do it. Many agents will call and ask you if they're interested in reading it. You know, I've been interested in reading things before, and I don't. I hope I don't sound like, you know, a jerk. But the truth is, I don't really. I am officially not taking on new clients. My head can be turned, by something wonderful, and is often turned by something wonderful that I will pursue and see if I'm interested in it. But if I find out that then it's with other agents too, and I might read it and love it, and then find that they've signed with somebody else, I don't need to spend, you know, 2 days reading something or thinking about it and getting all excited about it to find that, you know, it hasn't gone my way. Boy, that sounds terrible. I'm kind of embarrassed to have confessed that. But really, my job is to make other people compete. I'm a bad loser. Okay, this person had a question before. Yeah. Okay.
First one, say you publish at least one text, you know, and turns out it doesn't sell really well or whatever. Could you like publish another one with a pseudonym or like anonymously? No one would know except like you and me. You know.
You know what? There's no shame in not selling well. The best writers have, you know, have that claim to fame. So I don't think there'd be any need for that. If you were sued because of plagiarism, you might want to change your name. But
okay. And the other one, do you submit your manuscript? And as you said, sometimes either editors might not edit it at all, or sometimes they might. Well, you didn't say that.
Yeah.
they might tear it apart.
Yeah.
You know? And like at that point, you know, once I guess your manuscript's been accepted, whatever, they tear it apart, they show it to you again, and you're like, I hate this. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
it's...
can you pull out
mm-hmm.
at that moment?
Yeah. Yeah, it can happen. I mean, it's a really, usually it's, you know, more incremental and subtle and insidious than that, you know. Suddenly you wake up and your book is published and you realize that, you know, there's somebody else's kind of stamp on it. But it's much harder to figure out where it happened along the way. I think it's a really tricky thing, you know.
Is it still going to be yours, you know, or is it going to
yeah.
be yours?
Yeah, it's still yours. You can, you know, you have to agree on the changes. And what you would do at that point is say, you know what, I don't like where this is. I want to revise it again.
Okay.
And they would either say, no, unless you agree to these changes, which we think are editorially necessary, you know, we don't, you know, you might have a falling out. It doesn't really happen very often. It's very collaborative. You fight a lot. You know, I think that most writers really hate their editors at some point, probably hate their agents too, for telling them things that they don't want to hear or whatever. But I think that if you have a good editor, you will have a real tussle with them, but it's your responsibility to not be a pushover and to think about what you're doing, to try things even, you know, to try what they're suggesting if it's really kind of hands-on. But if you don't, you know, you are the only, the editor's job is to help you write your book in the best possible way. And so you have to be the final judge of it. And most publishers would realize, you know, do realize that actively, you know, say that. And they just do the best they can. It's hard to know whether you have a good editorial rapport until you've been through the process. And it's hard to know sometimes even after you've been through the process.
Time for
okay.
one.
Sorry.
No, just I was just saying we have time for about one more question.
Okay.
Two small questions. First, do you only deal with Canadian publishers, or do you send out your...
Right. Sorry, I didn't really make that very clear either. The agency sells rights all over the world. I sell in Canada, the US, and the UK directly, and then in translation territories we use co-agents. So we have somebody, a partner, a person on the ground in the other territories who understands the publishing scene in Bulgaria, and it's great. So in territories where we sell directly, we charge 15% of the income earned by the writer, and in the translation territories where we use a co-agent, we charge a total commission of 20%, and that's 10% for us and 10% for the co-agent.
And does it help if the writer that's submitting to you has previous experience, or do you take that into account when you take on clients, or do publishers take that into account, or not necessarily?
Yeah, you mean previous books?
Yeah. Well, not for any type of publishing that someone else has done or.
Yeah, like if you're, are you a fiction writer?
Yes.
Yeah, I think publishing short fiction is a good thing. It's not essential, but it's definitely a good thing. You know, and if you've, you know, published one story, as you know, I have a client who has done very, very little publishing. He's very young, but one of his stories happened to be picked up and shortlisted for an O. Henry Prize. You know, something like that definitely makes you pay attention, but it doesn't really, it's not going to help you unless they love your novel. That's really the thing. And so therefore, if you've never done any publishing, but you write something that is really special, then and really well done, then it won't matter. It will soon not matter.
Let's bring up one more. I was gonna ask about right to first refusal, the benefits or drawbacks of negotiating for or against.
Well, I think it's completely reasonable to give your publisher right of first refusal on your next book. They are investing a lot in, you know, just trying to create a profile for you as a writer of your first book, and even with subsequent books, they're putting a lot into trying to develop you as a person that they can pitch to media and so forth. And you know, as long as it's a right of first refusal without matching privileges, and you probably don't need to know about that here, but as long as it's not too restrictive, then you know, if they offer on a next book and they and you don't like the offer, or you've had a falling out and you really just don't want to work with these people anymore, you don't like them personally, you just tell them. You know, and they don't want to publish anybody who doesn't want to be published by them, generally. So it has to be, it is kind of back and forth, but I don't think there's any reason to worry about that. And we can talk more about that if you want detail.
So I'd like to thank you very much for sharing your experience and responding. Thank you.